A climb down by the junta, or has the reinstated Prime Minister of Sudan been co-opted? After long resisting pressure, Abdullah Hamdok freed from house arrest and signing Sunday with the junta an agreement to form a government of technocrats. The former national civil servant saying he did it to spare further bloodshed. We will ask, what are the terms and conditions of a turnaround that's been met with pushback from those who in the past weeks have braved bullets to demand a proper return to a civilian transition? How will international mediators react? We'll gauge their initial statements. And what next for those who staged the October 25th coup that called time on what was supposed to be a three-year transition to the first return of Sudan to civilian rule in decades? Longtime strongman Omar al-Bashir may be gone, but his top brass still calling the shots. As Egyptian and Algerian viewers will tell you, it's not so easy to make soldiers go back to barracks when they've been around for so long. Today in the France 24 debate, we're looking at Sudan's divisive deal to come out of the crisis. And joining us from Khartoum, Muzan Al-Neil, non-resident fellow at the Tahrir Institute for Middle East Policy. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you very much. Thank you for having me.
From London, Alam Ahmed, founder of the International Diaspora Project. Tell us what the International Diaspora Project is.
Very nice to see, to be with you in this program. The International Diaspora Project started in 2008 at the University of Sussex, aiming to help countries in developing countries with the expertise of the Sudanese or whatever their nationality who lives in the OECD's countries. Like myself, a Sudanese, but I'm British. I can transfer the knowledge and the skills I have gained in the United Kingdom to my home country, plus helping other countries where I have the knowledge, like African or Middle Eastern countries.
Okay, that program at the University of Sussex, as you say. With us as well, Roland Marchal, Horn of Africa researcher at the French Political Science Institute, Sciences Po. How are you?
Hi.
Thanks for coming by. The France 24 debate, where you can join the conversation, and you have on Facebook and Twitter, hashtag F24debate. It's not just Abdullah Hamdok. Other civilian leaders freed after Sunday's deal. The head of Sudan's Congress Party, Omar al-Dajir, telling the French news agency AFP earlier that after his release that he had been cut off from the world in solitary confinement ever since last month's coup. Caris Garland has more on a post-coup moment where there's a lot of unease, particularly as the death toll continues to rise.
Chanting power is for the people, protesters in Sudan rejected a deal between the country's military and prime minister. The pact reinstated Abdullah Hamdok as civilian PM almost 1 month after he was ousted by the military. Hamdok had been a hero of the protest movement, but on Sunday lost much of that support. After being under house arrest since the October 25 coup, Hamdok signed the deal with military leader General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan at the presidential palace. The 14-point deal promises the release of civilian leaders who were detained when the army seized power. Sudan has seen mass demonstrations since the coup, and medics aligned with the protest movement say more than 40 civilians have been killed in violent crackdowns. Hamdok said he agreed to the deal to prevent more casualties.
هذا الاتفاق يساعد على فك الاختناق. نتمنى فك الاختناق الداخلي والخارجي ونستعيد مسار الانتقال لتحقيق ديمقراطية مستدامة في بلدنا.
Hamdok had been appointed to lead a transitional government after longtime leader Omar al-Bashir was ousted in April 2019. His reinstatement and the agreement with Burhan was welcomed by both the African Union and the United Nations. Pro-democracy groups, however, are maintaining calls for full civilian rule without military involvement.
Muzan al-Neil, internet restored, civilian leaders freed from jail. What's in this deal, though?
Well, I think it's important to say that what happened yesterday was a historic and almost comical PR failure by the military coup team, which Mr. Abdullah Hamdok recently chose to join. The agreement is no different from the demands made by the coup leader, General Burhan, on his first press conference after the coup, where he announced that he plans to change the cabinet and keep Hamdok as prime minister of the coup government. And that is what happened. The agreement also totally removed the FFC from the power sharing setup. And as the Sudanese people have experienced over the past 2 years, we clearly saw that power cannot be shared. Full power was always at the hands of the military, and it is now still at the hands of the military, just without the facade of the so-called civilian leadership. The announcement of the agreement, as was shown in your report, was during the previously planned Millions March, which was called for and organized by the resistance committees. The choice of the time ensures that all the parties involved in this coup and in this agreement are quite ignorant about the reality in the streets. While announcing it at any different time might have caused some confusion between the public and maybe bought the coup some time, both the government and the coup's prime minister, this choice of time facilitated the process of organic popular consensus building. Within seconds from the news, the protesters in the streets, as you heard in your report, were chanting against Hamdok. The chant that we just heard was Hamdok and Neya Shari Hai, which can be translated to Lousy Hamdok, the streets are alive. The coup leaders and all those who welcomed the deal after that, they insist on ignoring the resistance committees as a major and player, and currently the main political voice representing the streets, the main political voice leading and planning the protests and even putting out demands. They've put out a set of 7 demands, one of which is total removal of the military from the political process. But I have to say that reports such as the one we just heard, where they are represented vaguely as pro-democracy protesters, is not helping anyone to understand the reality and be able to anticipate the reaction from the streets. This is an organized resistance and should be dealt with as an organized resistance with clear demands.
An organized resistance with a leadership, with a new head, because wasn't there public opinion just last week on this very show? We had people telling us, oh, well, I had my hesitancy about Hamdok, but he's under house arrest. He's stood up so far to the military. Now, if you're saying that everyone's turning against Hamdok, who's the leader?
It's clearly the leader are the resistance committees, and their compass is their demand. Just before the agreement, Hamdok was still at the side of a civilian government, and that's how the people saw it in the streets, and thereby they stood behind him because he represented a path towards their demands. It's not about him as a political brand or a name. And that needs to be clear to the international community as well, who seem to believe that just returning Hamdok can bring stability to the country. It's clear that the only thing that can bring stability to the country is to satisfy the clear demands of the people, including but not limited to the total removal of military from the political scene.
Muzan al-Neil, are you surprised? Sorry, let me put this to Alam Ahmed. Alam, are you surprised that Abdullah Hamdok has signed on the dotted line with the junta after being under house arrest?
Thank you very much. If you allow me first to pay my full respect to all those we lost during the last 3 weeks, but also the one we lost during the last 2 years. Including children of 13 years old. That's the painful episode or the painful scene of what we are discussing today. We have 13 years old children being killed. Simply, they're asking for basic, very, very basic, I don't even call it basic, very basic of their human rights. And more shockingly, those who have lost their life marching on the street in Khartoum, in all cities and towns in Sudan, Darfur, West, East, North, plus those across the whole world, in London, in your country, there, in Paris, in America, all over the world, as far as Australia, they were marching asking for their rights to be restored. Iconically, they were asking about Prime Minister Hamdok to be released with his full cabinet back into power. That's the agony of this. The millions who were marching, they were marching asking for Hamdok. One of their demands is Hamdok and his government to be released and to re-embark him. Then suddenly, Prime Minister Hamdok woke up into that palace yesterday and signed this, whatever you call it, piece of paper with the military which was killing people and the military which people have fought for 33 years. I'm not calling it 30 years, but more than 30 years, because in the last 2.5 years, our families, our people in Sudan, they have still been fighting the military, and this is the result. The problem with Prime Minister Hamdok, back to your question, whether I was surprised or not surprised, during the last 2 years or maybe more than two years, there were so many incidents where people have been very skeptical about what is Prime Minister Hamdok is actually up to. He came as a unifying figure to put all the Sudanese together. He came after a dictator of 30 years. People expected him to build, or to some people, they were even expecting him to be Mandela of Sudan or Gandhi of Sudan. But many things have been in between this last 2 years journey, which makes people, I know that I've been in discussion with some Sudanese senior politician, and they told me Alam Hamdok is coming back as a prime minister. From the first week he was being put in house arrest. How did they interpret that? Because of many things. I will just give you one example of the time. When that issue of normalization of relationship with Israel broke out, Prime Minister Hamdok, in his own words, he said the decision to normalize relationship with Israel, for example, it will be taken after we will have our parliament, our having our assembly, and they will decide. So everyone then rested and they went in calm. Few weeks later, we have seen by our own eyes the Sudanese former or current, I'm not sure, he said he resigned, Minister of Justice, went to the American Embassy in Khartoum, signing the normalization with Israel, while the Prime Minister told that there will be no normalization of Israel before you, the people, sign that, agree on that. So this is just one of the various episodes made people.
Yeah, but with each of these episodes, with hindsight, excuse me for asking, with each of these episodes, with hindsight, we're left wondering how much of a free hand the civilians had in the first place, and whether or not, having guys with guns who you're supposed to be working alongside with to do this transition, whether it was always going to be a slippery slope.
It is. You're absolutely right. And the military in the entire African continent, I can tell you, it's all African countries, they have the same problem. And I remember in your report when you started, you mentioned Egypt and Nigeria, and you're right. So, yes, it's a very tricky government, but people have warned from the start, this will not work. And I remember here, and I also bear my respect to the passing of many people who have raised this issue, is not going to work. But they signed the agreement and they start working on it. There were many tricky slopes we came through where we would expect it, the leadership, not just the prime minister, but also the freedom and change force to show real and genuine political, if you like, or to raise up to the aspiration of the Sudanese people and make sure we will cut this military once and forever. We're not going to go back to that.
All right, and that brings us to the question of what was going on when we were watching this past month, that shuttle diplomacy taking place. Among the international reactions, we have heartfelt congratulations by junta backers Saudi Arabia and Egypt, yeah, along with various shades of cautious approval from the rest of the international community. Here you see that troika of envoys from the U.S., U.K., and Norway that earlier this month shuttled between the military and the civilians. And just as the U.S. Secretary of State was getting set for his tour of Africa last week, Antony Blinken dispatched his top diplomat on Africa, Molly Fee. She's seen here in Khartoum alongside Minister of Foreign Affairs Mariam Al-Mahdi, who was put aside, we should say, by the coup. On Twitter Sunday, Blinken, expressing encouragement over the lifting of that state of emergency. He's urged all sides, quote, to work towards key transitional tasks on a civilian path to democracy in Sudan. I also reiterate our call for security forces to refrain from excessive force against peaceful protesters. Roland Marchal, of course, excessive force against peaceful protesters, Sudanese doctors this Monday saying one more person's been killed, raising their toll to 41. They go further than that. They talk about people being targeted in hospitals and blocked from getting treatment. So that's a pretty serious charge leveled by those Sudanese doctors. What went on during that shuttle diplomacy, and what do you make of the reaction of the U.S. and others?
I think the situation is quite easy because what we see today seems, as my two fellow Sudanese commenters said, that Hamdok has basically given up to the military. Now, we have to
look. Is that your reading of it?
I'm highly skeptical of such a deal, but I'm as well aware that maybe the full content of the deal is not known, and I'm surprised by the international support to such a deal, because I don't see what the US or the European Union could get on a 3 month basis of what has been achieved yesterday. Hamdok is under the what we know today. We lead a cabinet of bureaucrats. We don't know who is going to appoint those bureaucrats. We don't know what policy this cabinet is going to implement. We don't know what will be the configuration of the Sovereignty Council. It may not change. I doubt very much one of the requests made by the military to enlarge the political spectrum represented in the transition is fulfilled by just getting the Turabi supporters and the Ghazi Salahuddin supporters into the new political arena. So I have many doubts, and what I believe is, you could have hypotheses, because I don't know what is true and what is not. You could have hypotheses like, first, the international community or those countries or those institutions made an assessment of the popular protest and do not share the view that this protest is as successful as described here, and therefore you should make a compromise with the military, knowing that the balance of forces today is in favor of the military. This is one. A second hypothesis might be that, as I said, is just a first step, and then the international community or those institutions will play a role trying to get a much bigger share for the civilians, because on a day-to-day, military will show that they have not the competence, they have not the expertise to make decisions and take the lead on key positions, on key policies, and therefore the civilians will basically reassert themselves into the political arena, whatever the military claims.
And giving the international community the benefit of the doubt, you could say that after decades of having Sudan under sanctions, they want to wait till it's absolutely necessary.
You could say as well that the West is very concerned by the fact that Russia show maximum support for the coup makers, and that the Americans, maybe European Union, are increasingly concerned about Russian policy in Sudan, and therefore they prefer to deal with the military and with, let us say, a weak civilian government as a way to avoid Russia to get maximum influence, as is going to happen in Mali. All these statements are only hypotheses, okay? There is no, I don't have hard proof that anything is true, but certainly that makes sense. What is clear is, as well, maybe last point is, the international community is very much concerned about what is going to happen in Ethiopia in the next few days or couple of weeks. Addis Ababa is going to fall into the hands of the rebellion. That means a major mess.
You sound like it's a certainty.
Yeah. I strongly believe it's going to happen.
Really?
Now, I'm much beyond my academic role, because as an academic, I should never, ever forecast the future. But certainly, I believe it's very likely. It's very likely. So, and this is a problem for the whole region. Therefore, let us stabilize a bit Sudan today, even if it's not a good solution, because we know that tomorrow morning, we will have a major crisis, a very complex crisis in Ethiopia. We need Sudan to be settled, whatever settled mean. So all those points are just hypotheses. What is clear is, okay, even if the million protester march wasn't 1 million, there won't be stability in Sudan under what appears today as the deal. Because people will keep protesting in the street, there will be more people killed, and therefore there will be more youth in the street. And then there will be a moment where violence won't be only on the police or military or rapid support force. So this creates a huge question on the stability of Sudan beyond the next 3 months. Another aspect which for me is very concerning, I would be ready to believe, contrary to the street, Khartoum street, that yes, you need some kind of solution, compromise on both sides. Now, one important point of the compromise was the release of all those arrested after the coup. What we heard is there are rumors that 4 or 5 key personalities have been released, including Yasser Arman, Omar Al-Diger, as you mentioned. Now, there are hundreds of people who have been arrested, not only in Khartoum, as well in the provinces. And those people were key to mobilize the resistance committees. They are social civil society activists. They are still in jail. We don't know where they are. We don't know how they are treated. And so how this agreement could work if already the commitment to release those people is not respected. And this is the first question to ask Hamdok. It's not about the policy, it's not about the technocrats or so-called technocrats is going to identify. It's really about the very people who went to the street to support him when he was under arrest and will stay in jail while himself is released.
On that point, Muzan Al-Neil, the restoration of internet access, is that a sign that the junta feels that it's in the driver's seat? It can loosen the leash a little.
On that, I'll actually go back to what Mr. Marshall also said. It's clear that both the coup forces as well as the international community did not they misgauged the amount of the level to which the streets reject and will reject this agreement. And as for the international, of course, the return of the internet came from a miscalculation that it will be filled by thanks to Hamdok and agreeing with the new deal and accepting it and maybe some celebrations, and that did not happen. What was clear, the mistake from the coup forces, from the coup government, including Mr. Hamdok and the international community, is that they totally ignored the resistance committees and they ignored the streets. And that's because the framework by which they deal with our part of the world does not include people's demands. It does not include human rights. The role of the international community has been a counter-revolutionary one, and even a rather racist one towards Sudan, not just over the past 3 weeks, but the 2 years before it. Since the first days of the coup, the special representatives of the UN Secretary General, the UK ambassador, the US envoy, among many other international diplomats, kept calling for a dialogue with the coup leadership and a return to a government that includes the coup leaders, regardless of the protesters killed in the streets, which is the current deal that they are welcoming. So this is what they always asked for.
Sorry for interrupting, Muzan, but isn't that when Abdullah Hamdok, the prime minister, says, I did this because I want to spare more bloodshed. Does he have a point?
He does not have a point. And that is something that we already heard. Those messages of stopping the bloodshed or chances of economic prosperity by rejoining the international community and all of that were already utilized by the previous deal 2 years ago. They were utilized to convince the public, and for a while it bought the previous power sharing set up some time where the Sudanese people waited, and so that they were still killed, and that regardless of whatever economic conferences and where they are held or any other kind of aid coming from any international community, at the end Sudanese people were getting poorer, inflation was getting worse, and people were trying to protest but being killed in the streets. Actually, the international community, including the IMF and the Paris Club, they kept passing their policies utilizing the power sharing setup, where people are told that rejecting these policies means giving a chance to the military to return and weakening the civilian leadership. While the civilian leadership did not stand by the people, neither did the international community when the military killed the people in the streets as they protested desubsidizing basic goods or economic liberalization or the delay in serving justice to those who killed the protesters in the June 3rd massacre of 2019.
As you heard Roland Marchal say earlier, inside of Sudan's opposition, it's such a wide spectrum, right? It goes from the Islamists all the way to the left wing, and there's all different. It's a very cosmopolitan a coalition. How do you hold it together under these circumstances?
What matters to the Sudanese streets is holding together the opposition or the resistance leadership that puts forward demands that are related to people's lives, to increasing the chances, ensuring that criminal justice will be served against the military murderers, that economic justice will be served for the people of Sudan. And currently, those who are holding these demands and committing to it are the resistance committees, who refused even to join the meetings of the special representatives who wanted to call them into his dialogue initiative. And they publicly went with a statement saying that they're not interested in closed room politics. They're not interested in negotiation with murderers. This is a framework that is very difficult, I can see, for Western diplomats to understand about Sudan right now, and to imagine that people in Africa have clear demands that they will stick to more than they will stick to personal or political brands and just be calmed by an agreement by a bunch of old men in power in a closed room. And that's why they keep on failing on trying to provide an agreement that will bring stability. As your guest just said, stability can only be provided by satisfying the demands of the people. It was freedom, peace, and justice, and it still is. People were not kidding when they put out those slogans. And that's what it seems that counter-revolutionary and racist governments in the West just does not want to believe.
Roland Marchal?
Certainly the international community, and we see for our own country in UK or in France, they don't frame policy according to the street. They do answer to street grievances, to social movements, but it's very difficult. You know, what has been happening over the last months after the coup is a radicalization of the street. And there is a moment where a politician has to stand and to express his or her view, and that shouldn't be only to follow what the street is shouting, is pushing for. There's a moment where you have to be more realistic, because you know the seriousness of problems. Demonstrations are not a monopoly of Sudan. And again, it doesn't mean that Sudanese demonstrators are wrong. It just means there is a moment where at least the international community has been pushing for that and was supported by so many activists for that, where you need a mediation, you need some kind of compromise. The compromise doesn't mean that the military have to stay in power forever, but certainly he has first to reinstall civilian authority. It's not the case today, for what we know. And again, he has to limit violence against demonstrators. That's a point mentioned by the statements that human rights have to be respected, not only in the control of violence against demonstrations, but as well in the ability of ordinary people to express freely their views without being coerced by the police or the security.
Alaa Mohamed, you heard Orlan Marchal earlier mention how right now neighboring Ethiopia is burning. So what do you do if you're a Western diplomat? Do you think to yourself, well, let's have an imperfect compromise in Sudan, because at least that way we won't have two fires on our hands?
I think one of the mistakes by the Western countries, particularly the United States, the United Kingdom, or what you call them, the Troika, and also to some extent some of the other countries which are involved heavily in this issue, is that they focus too much on the prime minister, whether it's Hamdok or not Hamdok. But they did not really pay much attention to the actual people who actually brought Hamdok. Hamdok did not come by election, or did not come by any good CV. All his CVs, he was working at the United Nations. That's all his CV. PhD and all that stuff is nothing for me to be a good prime minister. But he came by the will of people. The people who brought him, they should have been given the full attention. And the like the American aid before, I remember when I was young, it says the U.S. aid from the United States people to the people of the world. So the Troika people, the West, should pay more attention to the people. They should connect with the people. They should put more focus on those who are killed on the street, on the 13. I was very pleased before I come on air with you to watch the attaché of affairs of the American embassy visiting the family of one of the youngest victim. I think she's 17 years old. This is what you need. You need that closeness. You need the glue with the Sudanese people, because the Sudanese people are the one who you should pay them attention. It's not the prime minister. That's number one. Number two, I can't remember in the last 2 years any of the Western countries, including France, which supported Sudan massively by that conference. I like that. Saudi Arabia, United Arab Emirates, Egypt, America, United Kingdom, my own country. I can't remember any of them showed any, if you like, not condemnation, or not showed any, if you like, let's call it a yellow card to Hamdok when there's so many mistakes happening along the way. Many people, mass graves, we haven't heard anything. There were people, families in Sudan, in Medan, in Khartoum, in the western side of Darfur. They don't even know where are their kids who have been killed during the revolution. They were found in refrigerators. None of the Western society have said any strong word to Hamdok. This is something is going to destroy your credibility. I was reading in the social media, someone in the Facebook, or I can't remember in the WhatsApp, mentioned 14 times Hamdok promised organize or set up a committee to find the rights of those who were killed. He always tried to calm people. Oh, I have set a committee. It's going to report to me in a month. Months after a month, we haven't heard anything. So people have lost the hope. He counted 14. So I think the main issue here is, if the West society asks me for advice, the Troika, France, Germany, all these countries, I will say to them, connect with the people of Sudan.
All right, connect with the people
Forget
of Sudan.
Forget about Hamdok.
Right. Connect with the people of Sudan. You're saying we've talked a lot about Hamdok. We haven't talked too much about the man at the top, General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan. On Sunday, he insisted that the military's move was not a coup, but a step to rectify the transition.
We don't want to eliminate anyone, just as what's been agreed on during the national conference. We want a real partnership with all the national forces, so we can build institutions capable of going towards a civilian transition.
What's your reaction, Roland Marchal, when you hear General Al-Burhan?
Let us say the good face doesn't belong to all. The FFC, the Front for Freedom and Change, has made many mistakes. And maybe one day we will have a debate on the transition, on what went wrong beyond the personality of Hamdok, because it's true that Hamdok hasn't shown all the time the leadership capacity that was needed. And he was criticized by many people, including in his own cabinet, because of his refusal to confront the military on technical issues and on not fulfilling some important symbolic promise to the population. But really, what is happening today is basically the exclusion of the FFC. And the FFC, with all mistakes we should talk about, is a front made up of various organizations that play a key role in the movement that brought Omar al-Bashir regime to an end. So he has to be acknowledged this importance. He has to be acknowledged supporters and followers who are much more numerous than those of the two organizations that will be reintegrated today into the political arena. The Turabi supporters and the Razi Saladin supporters, as I said, I pay respect. They are Sudanese. They have the right to have their views. But if we look numbers, they are certainly much less than those people. And yet those people today, they are excluded. So what kind of rectification is it if it's to marginalize forces that have been key even in the promotion of Burhan as a leader of Sudan? So we have to be aware that, really, as I said, the situation is very hazy. Some clarification will come in the next days. Maybe the scenario is not as bad as is described today. But certainly the civilians and Sudan democracy has quite bad days to come yet.
Muzan al-Neil, when the so-called revolution began in December of 2018, you had the examples already, right, of Egypt, where under civilian rule, the head of the armed forces was Sisi, who then staged his coup. You had unfolding the street protests in Algeria, where they changed the leadership, but the system remains the same. It seems as though it's a little bit helpless. What do you do in the face when the military has been so entrenched in all aspects of life for so long?
Well, the short answer is you remove the military. The long answer is a lot of work that current resistance committees are working on, and hopefully more grassroots organizations as well as unions are getting involved in. It is important to remember that calling the demands, the very basic demands of the Sudanese people to have a government that answers to them, not to militias or to international donors, to call that unrealistic is something that the Sudanese people are not hearing for the first time now. It's something that the U.S. and the EU have told Sudan since 2013 and called for a national dialogue also with Omar al-Bashir. And they kept calling for a form of dialogue up until almost the last days before the Sudanese people brought Omar al-Bashir down. So it's very expected for counter-revolutionary governments and counter-revolutionary thinking to take you to the place of thinking that it is not realistic for the people to get their demands. What's not realistic is to expect that a military by force can rule a population that can go in full civil disobedience and political strike against it. That happened after the coup. It also happened in 2019, in the days before the massacre of June 3rd, for which no one has been held accountable up until today. But at that time, although the public and the labor unions and the resistance committees were able to put the whole country down for full two days, of May 28th, May 29th, asking for a full civilian rule. At that time, the FFC, the opposition leadership, chose to utilize the power of the people to negotiate a power sharing agreement with the military instead of utilizing this power to basically take the power from the military. This is what we're hearing right now from the resistance committees, who are already putting out not just schedules for protests, but also schedules for building from the grounds up their structures and governance structures, including representative bodies. And as this process goes on, the success of it is to be able to basically just take the power from the military. They cannot rule a country that will not, where labor, the working class will not work to make money for them, and the public, the whole public, will be in civil disobedience against their laws. It's not possible. Unfortunately, the military is finding a lot of support from the international community that is just seeking quick stability at the cost of the rights of Sudanese people and at the cost of criminal and economic justice for Sudanese people. But what the resistance committees have repeated is that everybody who stands with the coup or try to whitewash it or try to justify a dialogue with the coup is basically helping the coup, and they become part of the enemy. It is unfortunate that the international community decided to become part of the enemy of the Sudanese revolution. But if it's so, I think that the Sudanese revolution is eventually on its way to win this fight.
All right. Strong words there. Muzan Al-Neil, unfortunately, we're out of time. So much more to ask. I want to thank you for being with us from Khartoum. I want to thank Alam Ahmed in London, Roland Marshall. Thank you for being with us here in the France 24 debate.